Welcome to the Dawn of Shades on this February 26, 2008. It's a leap year, and leap day is this week. Doesn't mean much to me other than another day this year, but many people do attach special meaning to a leap year and a leap day. The special meaning to the program tonight is really all about dreams, visions, synchronicities, and what meaning, if any, they may have in today's world. I'm hoping that the audience participates, giving us input about what they're thinking and what they have seen or heard or been told by others. It's always interesting to see how other people perceive similar events and the difference in interpretation. That interpretation is the tricky part. That's where we get all tangled up and confuzzled and beset with doubt. Did we misinterpret the information? Did the source we turn to for help in interpreting have an agenda separate from giving us the plain truth? Do we have it right? Is this vision or dream inspired by fear or hope or colored beyond any form of real truth? If one of us has a prophetic dream or vision or some other event, how do we find the truth within that event? What's the best method? It's not like we can call 1-800-VISION-INTERPRETATION-INTERNATIONAL and get the straight poop. Now, November and I have been friends for years, and we have often discussed this stuff privately. But this is the first time that much of this has been introduced into a public forum. It may be controversial to some. It may be something that we shouldn't discuss to others. For those who have discussed these events with me before, who have told me or emailed me this information, rest assured, neither of us will be giving out any personally identifiable information, and the Dream Police will not be knocking on your door as a result of what it said during the course of the program tonight. Often when this stuff is discussed in small groups, no one has the answers. All we can do is entertain possibilities. Some of them may seem terribly outlandish and suitable only for a B-rated sci-fi movie. Some may seem incredibly conservative, and some may be more along the lines of dogma. We look at them from many angles, and personally I'm suspicious of anyone who says that it's a cut-and-dried process of taking the symbology and assigning values to each symbol and adding up the total. It just isn't that simple. It's not supposed to be, maybe. Perhaps the universe sends us this information in such a cryptic form so that we do have to think and make allowances for errors. Sometimes as we search for the truth and meaning, we have to just simply say we don't agree, but that's okay. Here are some options. It's all about listening to the original dream, then discussing what it could mean in terms of possibilities. And we don't have to reach any kind of consensus for it to all be okay. Now, November, I thought that maybe tonight the best way to start would be by defining some terms. I have a whole list of them here, but we better go through them one at a time. I guess we should start with dream. Now, to me, I think it's just what happens when we're sleeping and we see and do things. What do you think?
Dreams. I have dreams categorized into four different types myself, personally, not from any website or anything like that. I think we have our everyday normal dreams. Something's happened in life or something we've seen on television and somehow is manifested into our dream world. I think those are pretty easy to point out. I think we have dreams that that are very lucid, very real. Oftentimes they seem like we're actually a part of a whole other world. And, you know, that's definitely different than the other ones. We have nightmares. I think everybody knows what those are, the ones that when we wake up, we're still half afraid.
And sweat and your heart's pumping.
Exactly. And then there's this other dream, this, I don't know what you want to call it, a prophetic dream, a disaster dream, an apocalypse-type dream. And those in themselves are very lucid, but what I've noticed with people is those are the ones they never forget.
Well, that's
my
nightmares that are just as vivid today as they were 20 or 30 years ago, I have
exactly
to admit. But, you know, as far as the apocalyptic dreams or the prophetic dreams, they do seem to be more memorable.
Yeah, kind of in a class of their own.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I guess the next thing we better do is tell the audience what we're talking about with the apocalyptic dream term. We're not talking about anything biblical in nature or religious in nature. Apocalyptic is a term that we sort of chose because of the magnitude of the disaster and changes that are going on around you. Your world has been turned upside down, literally, and so is that of everyone around you. Oftentimes it does contain things that I guess are really sort of in tune with the biblical apocalypse sort of thing. There's lots of dead people and whatnot, death, disease, and famine, that sort of thing. But it really isn't biblical in nature. It's not religious in nature. It's it can be as emotionless as a CNN report.
Right. No, and I agree. I think we just use the term apocalyptic because that is a term that, well, people can identify with. It doesn't necessarily mean that we're interpreting it as some type of a religious, you know, I don't know what you want to call it, profound something, you know. It's just a word. It's just a term that anybody could identify with. If you mention apocalyptic dream, they're like going, oh, my gosh, disaster, death, destruction, you know, all that type of thing.
Well, you know, having doom and gloom dreams has got to be one of the least pleasant things. And it's very common among abductees. And, it's just part and parcel that seems to go with it, whether it goes with the awakening sort of thing or what, you know, I don't know. But I know a lot of abductees do have the apocalyptic dreams.
No, I agree. I have studied this for 10 years myself. I have various individuals all over the world. Whenever they have one of these types of dreams or a dream of maybe an unknown, disturbing type nature, yeah, they'll contact me. Hey, are you hearing anything about this? Have other people been experiencing that? Because one thing we have discovered over time is it does seem to run in cycles with, you know, a group of individuals. And maybe the individuals in the group change, you know, over time, but it's a very fascinating subject. But I know we're trying to define terms here. I don't know if you want to slip too far.
We're going to go off on tangents. That's already a given.
Oh, but yeah. You
know, another thing that I guess a lot of people have trouble with is the term vision. Some kids, we sort of associate that with otherworldly people of, I guess, dubious mental stability.
Yeah.
And yet it is a term that sometimes you really can't, we don't have another one. So you kind of put up with the connotation to go with the term vision. But I guess what I'm referring to there is waking dreams of the prophetic sort, where you're awake and you have this dream while you're doing something. And that does happen to people.
Yes, it does.
It's same people, too.
Yes, and they do see things, and they do see things ahead of time. And it's, you know, it's not something widely publicized. And it's not like you have this, you know, website that everybody can go feed information into that, you know, I've seen this vision, you know, something like this might be, you know, happening or going to happen. And, you know, it always seems that even if somebody has a vision of something that is going to occur, it doesn't matter what they do. There is no way to stop it.
No. But at the same time, I've had friends who've had dreams about a child getting hurt in a certain activity, and they didn't let their child go in the activity, and their child did not get hurt, but someone else did.
Oh, no, that's interesting. I haven't heard that one before.
No, I've recently heard probably of a half dozen different cases where they'd had the dream. One case that I'm thinking about, my son's best friend, his mother had a dream that the boy got hurt falling out of a tree when they were hunting, when he was hunting with his dad. She didn't let him go on that hunting trip with his dad. And someone did fall out of the tree stand. You know, it wasn't a serious injury. It might have been for, I'm thinking at the time, the boy was only 6 or 7 years old. To fall 20 feet at 6 or 7 is a different event than falling as an adult. But someone else did fall out of the tree stand. You know, something happened with it. It broke or something. I don't remember what the exact deal was. But, you know, it can be things like that. You know, someone told me recently about I believe it was a ski trip, water skiing, and they didn't let their son go, and there was an accident, and everybody in the boat drowned.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, things like that do happen.
Right, I have heard of things like that, most definitely.
Well, and too, you know, I don't know if this is an urban legend or not, but I'm told that a plane that crashes is going to have more people who didn't show up to take the flight, miss the flight, for whatever reason, and that, like, buildings that are going to be bombed, like the Oklahoma City bombing, the 9/11 bombings, they had an unusually high number of call-ins that day.
It almost makes you wonder if there isn't something going on subconsciously with, and maybe it's not everybody. Maybe it's being intended.
Well, there again, I haven't been able to verify whether that's true.
I do remember hearing about the Oklahoma City bombings.
Even as an urban legend, that's indicating that people believe it, even if it's not true.
Right.
You know, so, yeah, that's, let's see, what are the terms? Prophecy and prophets. There's another terms that have a lot of emotion attached to them. You know, when we think of a modern-day prophet, unfortunately, we think of someone like Prophet Yahweh, who was hoaxing the UFO sightings in Nevada, you know. And, you know, you think of hoaxers and shysters and people of dubious morality and sanity. And, you know, we don't think about prophecies happening in the here and now.
Right. Well, we have a lot of, you know, like you said, fakes out there that basically are trying to, I don't know, feed upon their own ego or feed off other people's ignorance. You know, whatever it is, that's really sad because there probably are legitimate people out there. And then it's really hard to ascertain or discern, you know, who is and who's not and, you know, who's running a scam on you and, you know, who you should be listening to. That is a tough one.
Yeah, well, you know, I've been thinking about modern-day prophecies. I'm thinking about, and there have been a number of programs on television. There's a number of websites, you know, books, et cetera. They show various areas of North America that are going to be flooded, all these earth changes that are going to happen, mass calamities, you know, and, you know, they're really gloomy, doomy sort of things, you know. And so far, we haven't seen any sign it's going to happen, but that doesn't mean that tomorrow the equation couldn't change.
No, and that's true. And I do think that we do have accounts of some prophecies, forecasts, whatever word you want to use, that have been made even in the past that did come to fruition. But a lot of times, too, what we forget is a lot of these prophets that we look at from the past, their language, the way they understood the world, their terminologies, everything is so different than what we have today. So when you're trying to equate what it was they were seeing using their words as to what our future looked like, you're going to have a hard time pulling that off. And that's probably why so many of them seem so obscure.
That is true. But a lot of times, you know, I get to wondering, aren't the visions themselves the source of these prophecies? You know, so much of it is in symbology of various kinds, and you have to interpret it. And, you know, it can be interpreted so many different ways.
Right. Well, you go clear back to the whole idea of dream interpretation. I mean, symbolically, a train in a dream, you know, that's going to have a very particular meaning to me, but it might be totally different to you and even completely different to somebody, you know, in another region. You know, there's cultural meanings to certain things. There's religious meanings to or faith-based meanings to certain terms. There's, you know, all different types of meanings that you can apply to certain terms and to assume that it's going to mean the same for everybody, to me anyway, seems kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, you know, that is kind of, you know, like I said, you can't take the symbols and translate them and assign a value to them and add them up and, oh, bingo, we got the meaning. It's not like a mathematical equation. It's not that simple.
No, it's not.
And then we have synchronicity and coincidence. You know, how are they the same and how are they different?
Oh, well, those are synchronicity, anyways, is probably one of my most favorite words in the English language.
That's why it's included.
That's why it's included. Gina, knows that. A coincidence is you recognize something as just being a coincidence. It probably only happens once. Like, oh, what's a good example? Because I had it happen the other day. It was just a coincidence. Oh, I know. I was typing into this one individual, a guest that I was going to have concerning General Motors. And at the same time I was getting ready to type that in, somebody was talking about it, you know, openly in a room. And I just thought, well, that was kind of weird. But it was just a coincidence. I recognized it as that. Synchronicity goes beyond the coincidence. That's where you have a whole chain of events or sequence of happenings, and they're all, or at least they all appear to be interrelated, leading towards something. Of course, that's obscured too most of the time.
Yeah, that's true. Well, you know, in my own case, okay, anytime the suggestion of me moving or leaving New Orleans came up, it was like, you know, I've been nursing this banana tree for years. I really don't want to leave before I even get some cotton picking bananas off of it. Well, guess what appeared yesterday?
A banana.
The banana, well, the fruiting shoot, which is different than the leaves. Yeah, the first one appeared yesterday.
Oh, so what does that mean? Does that mean you're supposed to stay in New Orleans, or does that mean, okay, the banana's here, you can move?
Well, it's not bananas yet.
Oh.
It's sort of like seeing, you know, the apple blossom. It doesn't mean that, you know, you have an apple now.
I live in Oregon. Do you think I know what a banana tree looks like?
Mine looks really, I should take a picture of it because it looked really, really pathetic. It's very, very tall. It was too big to cover this year, and the frost got it. So it has one leaf. Well, yesterday had one leaf. It had some a new leaf coming out. But you could just see the coils where it went out. So it had one leaf that was partially green. The rest of it is dead. And then it sent out this fruiting shoot. Okay, you know.
I'll do.
And, you know, I kind of stood there and I looked at it because I've been waiting for years for this to happen. You know, this banana was supposed to only be 6 to 9 feet tall. It's about 15 feet tall now. Yeah, and I found that rather interesting, you know, and I did kind of stand there going, I'll be a monkey's uncle, with a banana, no less. Yeah, so, you know, is that an omen? Is that a sign?
I don't know either, and even if it is an omen or a sign, you could read it two different ways. It's a signal that you can't
move. Well, it could be
or
a signal that I'm not leaving immediately, but because, you know, it's about to fruit, or, you know, it could mean I'm leaving, you know, after the fruit's ripe.
Right.
You know, who knows? It depends on how you want to interpret it. But, you know, last week we interviewed Sarvananda Bluestone, who wrote the book, How to Read Signs and Omens in Everyday Life. And it's, you know, an interesting way of looking at things. It's really not, it's not an interpretation book. It's really more how to be aware of your surroundings. And maybe that's the key that, and in fact, in the virtual auditorium, someone just posted, the conscious mind has to recognize the synchronicity symbols of the subconscious mind. And such as the same word or phrase used in the same day as a keyword. You know, okay, here's an example. You know, several years ago I had a series of dreams, and they revolved around a dome house. Now, it started off, it was like replaying the memory of seeing the dome house the first time, which happens to be in Florida. And so I replayed the memory of seeing it before Hurricane Ivan, and I replayed it of seeing it after Hurricane Ivan. And, you know, and this went on for several weeks, over and over and over again. It's kind of a boring little clip because I wasn't there very long, and just outside it. And every time I went somewhere, doctor, dentist, wherever, you know, there's magazines on the table. They're outdated. You have no choice. You just pick up something and flip it open, you know? And lo and behold, here'd be an article about a dome house. And the first one, you kind of went, that's an interesting coincidence. And you flipped it shut, and, you know, you went about your day. after the second, third, fourth, fifth time, you kind of went, there's a little bit more coincidence. Why it's happening, I don't know. So then I researched dome houses a while. And then, you know, at the same time, I'm having more dreams about dome houses. And this got quite elaborate, and it lasted for months. And, you know, was this a sign that I needed to build one? I've been told it was more a sign that I needed to get my house in order, that it was more a symbol than it was a specific house.
Or maybe it was an education process that for whatever reason you needed to understand what a dome house was, the structure of it. Maybe something will happen later on concerning a dome house. I've had these synchronicities happen too, and sometimes I almost stop and wonder if it's just not some type of educational process, gathering information that you may use at a later date. Because you do get through these cycles, like you said, it was 2 months, and it does seem to last in cycles where all these events, you know, it can be looking at the magazine, somebody says something to you, someplace you happen to be, something you see on TV, and it all seems interrelated. But you're wondering, well, what's the purpose behind all this? And then you get to a point, and it's like, okay, it stops, and it's almost like the point, when you've reached the point, it's because you went through and researched to death whatever it is that this whole event thing is that you have something to do with. I don't even know if that's even remotely correct. That's just the pattern that I have noticed with myself.
Well, in terms of symbols, a dome house is the most weather-resistant form of house. You know, in this place in Florida where this dome house was, now it's an elevated dome house. The houses all around it were destroyed. They were living in that house. So it gives you a comparison, standard construction versus this dome house. And having just been through the Katrina thing, maybe this was, more about the symbol of, getting your house in order and being storm resistant. Because, it could be interpreted that way, too.
Yeah, it certainly could. Definitely. Well, we all know the dome houses can withstand, I know it's 200 miles an hour plus winds. And that's pretty impressive.
Well, it did make a profound impression on me, because you're looking at the beaches destroyed, the houses around it are destroyed. Some of them, there was virtually nothing left but some pylons. And there is the dome house. And not only is it still there, they're living in it.
Right. Yeah, I remember the whole dome house thing. I even went looking for them. Looking for the particular one that you had seen.
Because it really got on my, got on my nerves in a way. I now know more about dome house construction than I probably ever needed to know.
Right. And my little thing, my little synchronistic thing that I've been running on is darn cherry trees blooming, because I had one of those disaster dreams several years ago, and it never left me. And I mean, it was probably the most profound one I ever had. I mean, I'll even go as far to say I woke up with, crying hysterically, tears, everything, which was really weird. I'd never had that happen to me before. It was very bizarre. And I've never had a dream where there was any kind of a year there or anything like that. And at the very end of the dream, I'm driving down this long drive, and there's cherry trees in blossom, and I looked at the taxi driver, I was in a taxi, and I said, well, what year is it? I don't know what the conversation was before. Well, 2008. I thought, 2008? This is only 2006, I think, is when I had the dream, and it wasn't registering. It wasn't making sense. Well, then there were all these different things that went along with cherry trees and cherry tree blossoms, and this went on for months. And, it does. It makes you stop and wonder. I wouldn't say I run away with it, or I'm, worried, or I've made some kind of preparations because when the cherry trees bloom, something's going to happen, that type of thing. But it does make you wonder, why were all these different little events, surrounding this? And I hadn't even thought about the dream, for a year and a half, and then all of a sudden, poof, it pops up like
Well, it's 2008, and it's almost time for the cherry trees to blossom.
Exactly. So, anyways, maybe that's just a subconscious prompt. Maybe the subconscious remembers, cherry trees blossoming in 2008, and for whatever reason gets into the consciousness or You know, I really don't know. I'm not going to claim or profess to know anything about any of this stuff. The only thing I can really do is report on what I've heard from others, what I have noticed, you know, over the years with these various different things that we're talking about. Fascinating subjects. I've done a lot of research in all of them.
Yeah, and we've talked about these topics, you know, over and over again, because you're one of the people that I go looking for when I have one of these crazy dreams myself. And they're never, you know, all the information's never there. You know, when you have an apocalyptic dream, you don't see the events leading up to it. You may not even see how it happened. But then all of a sudden you're walking down a road and you're stepping over body parts and dead and dying people and vehicles are crashed in ditches around you, and you're just walking along like you're on a Sunday stroll headed somewhere, you know, and this doesn't make any sense. I mean, that's not the sort of person I normally am, you know, so why am I walking through this disaster scene? There again, like I'm on a Sunday stroll.
Right.
Absolutely no concern for the other people. You know?
No, it's almost like, sometimes too, it's almost like you're not even, I mean, you're there and you're in the dream, but you're not actually participating in whatever the disaster was. You're just kind of, I know what you're talking about. You're just kind of moving through it. You don't even know exactly what it was that happened. It's just like, I don't know, maybe if you think Civil War time, you know, after the Battle of Gettysburg. You weren't there for the Battle of Gettysburg, but a couple days later you went walking through the battlefield, kind of that type of feeling.
Well, this would have been much more immediate because these vehicles were literally, you know, a few had engines running. They were crashed in, you know, alongside the road. They were everywhere, which is why we were walking. You couldn't drive. And then there were people everywhere, you know, like I said, dead and dying and body parts laying around like discarded socks. And it was very strange, you know?
Yeah.
What would cause, you know, I have no idea what sort of an event would cause people to simultaneously crash like that anyhow. You know, is there such a real thing that could happen? Not that I know of. That doesn't mean there isn't something. I know that an electromagnetic pulse of some sort can disable vehicles. Would it cause them to crash? Maybe. I don't know. I don't know if it makes them lock up. I don't know what happened.
Oh, you know, I watched a program on that, the electromagnetic pulse, and they actually had a vehicle, you know, in it. I think they just had it running, though. They didn't necessarily have it moving. And immediately when the pulse hits, the engine shuts off. So I guess if you got a car that's traveling down the road 65 miles an hour and all of a sudden the engine shuts off, yeah, you would lose control and, you know, there would be potential there for crashes.
Yep, and guess what? It's time for a break. So, everyone, do stay tuned to the Paranormal Radio Network and the Donna Shades. We'll be right back with November Hansen.
How come he doesn't let me?
Welcome back to the Donna Shades. I'm your host, Gia Scott, and we're talking tonight with our guest, November Hansen. We've been talking about disaster dreams, visions, prophetic dreams, prophecies, and omens. Now, November is a longtime friend of mine, as well as a host of the Voice of the People on the Paranormal Radio Network. We have often discussed this topic in a more private forum, but we both felt that this is a topic that really should get more exposure as people deal with the phenomena recently dubbed the Awakening, and are more often having these kinds of dreams and visions. Now, even that phenomena is part of the prophetic dreams and visions thing in a way. If you would like to join this discussion, you can either join the virtual auditorium in Pal Talk. I have the directions for doing that posted on my website, which is www.giascott.com. That's Gia, GIASCOTT.com. Those directions are in the right-hand column. To call in on the toll-free number in the United States, just dial 1-877-786-0562. Now, November, on the break, we were talking about various things, and we thought we'd maybe talk about some of the more gruesome doom and gloom disaster dreams that have been talked about over the last decade or two. So you want to start it off?
Sure. Well, at least the last decade anyways. And, you know, it really is an interesting phenomenon because there is a rather large group of people. They all know each other. And it's so funny how all of this unfolds. You know, I got to state this, too. I told somebody before the program that, yeah, I think G is going to try to drag me out of my protective little shell a little bit here. Putting me on a program to do something like this because these are topics that are really discussed behind closed doors. I wouldn't say I particularly do it out of fear, you know, what somebody might think or something like that. I'm old enough now, you just don't care what people think anymore. But
sometimes we tend to put it like a need-to-know basis.
Right.
You know, and then you get to thinking, you know, what about that poor sucker out there in Podunk, wherever, who doesn't have anyone around, and he's having these dreams about this horrible disease that turns people into, you know, zombies of some sort, or, you know, the entire town being slaughtered by people in military uniforms, or some disease that just, you know, kills almost everybody in the town. Well, whatever version he's seeing or she's seeing, you know, they must think they've lost their mind. And yet this is a phenomenon. It's not that uncommon.
No, it's not. And I don't see anything wrong with wanting to talk about it. You know, like you said, there is a lot of people out there that do have these things happen. They don't know why. And you know, there are venues out there. You got to be careful who you come in contact with and get involved with. But there are venues out there to, you know, really be able to discuss them and, you know, put yourself at ease on a lot of things. No, you're not going crazy. And, yes, this does happen to other people. And, you know,
you know, I've been assured by a number of people that if you're crazy, first of all, you're not going to question your sanity. Secondly, you're going to be crazy all the time, not just on a single topic.
Right.
Or when you're asleep. You're not just crazy when you're asleep. You're either crazy or you're not crazy. You know, I'm only crazy on Tuesdays from 7 to 9 p.m.
Right, right. Well, I had an example of one thing that had happened. As again, I said, I think they're trying to pull me out of my protective bubble here. But this was really profound at the time, and I actually wrote it down. And then I didn't think about it for a long time. And anyways, what I wrote, this is back in 1999, I wrote an awful dream of a giant tsunami, perhaps India region, due to the attire of the people. I do not recall what triggered the event, but I was watching from a distance as great water swept up onto the land. The skies were dark as the water swept out to sea. Thousands of people were drug out with them. I could feel and see their terror and wanted to help them, but there was nothing I could do. I recall feeling utterly hopeless, in the dream. After a few days, those left ventured out. I actually walked between two-story buildings, like an alley on steps of stone going down a path. I recall the debris and seeing two men quietly talking in a foreign language and white turbans on their heads. Now, there was a huge tsunami. Of course, everybody knows in 2004. It was close to the India region. It was Indonesia. And even at the time that had happened, I had not went back to, you know, to even realize that I had actually wrote this down. What really made me go back and look at this was maybe several days later, 5, 6, 7 days later, I was watching CNN. I just happened to be walking through the living room, and it was on TV, and there was that alleyway exactly the way I seen it between the two buildings in the dream. So, of course, what am I doing? I'm asking myself, well, gosh, was this some kind of, you know, foresight? You know, how is this possible? You know, all kinds of things go through your mind. But I had no doubt then that was the actual tsunami that I seen. I had thought maybe at the time I was looking at some ancient disaster or something like that. But no, this is definitely it. So it was really interesting. You know, Gia,
well, then that makes you wonder, okay? You saw a tsunami, and, you know, you saw it as a very real event, as though you were, you know, observing. It sounds like you may have even been disembodied yourself. You were just like an all-seeing eye, seeing the event.
Right. It was just as an observer, almost, I don't know, like you were flying in a helicopter over the oceans, and then all of a sudden you're in between these two buildings. But it was, you couldn't really participate. I couldn't interact with the people in the dream. It was just watching what was happening. You know, the other thing, too, is I did write India region. It was pretty close, Indonesia. And I did write the word tsunami, so I recognized that in the dream, that was exactly what it was that had happened. What am I going to do with that? I don't know. Does this happen all the time? No. Hardly. I mean, we're talking a handful of times over the years. But still, there's enough there that makes you go, okay, why? How is it possible? You know, but really, there's no answers out there.
No.
That's it.
But, you know, I guess the thing is that you need to become more aware of yourself. You need to become more aware of your surroundings. You know, it's only with this awareness are you able to really pick up on these dreams and visions and begin to understand them. You know, and you know, I think about the most gruesome apocalypse, like some of the ones I've seen. There was this disease. It must have been a neurological disease, because first it affects only a relatively small portion of the population, maybe 10%. Ultimately, within a few days, something like over 90% of the population is dead. But not as a direct result of the disease, more as a side effect, I might say. What happens to the people that are affected, they seem to have some sort of mental degeneration. They become killers. And at first they're smart. They can, you know, shoot guns and use tools and things like that. They kill their wife, their husband, their children, their neighbors, their boss, their coworkers, their customers. They just kill. For no apparent reason, they're just killing. But within a matter of hours, they seem to lose cognitive function. And before long, they're incapable of operating a gun or even really an axe. They can, you know, take a stick and beat something with it. And that's really all an axe is to them, or a gun. They can't even figure out how to open a can to feed themselves. And within a few days, they are too stupid to feed themselves, and they obviously die. A few of them would survive, you know, manage to stay smart enough to feed themselves and survive as these packs of degenerate, I don't know, whatever. And they would roam around like wild dogs or something. And, you know, they managed to kill almost everyone in the entire world. You know, what kind of disease would do that, you know? I have no idea. I don't think there's anything that could do that. And why would these people all get it at the same time? It was just like, it's flipped the switch. 10% of the population's got this disease. So it's kind of a weird one.
That is very strange. Well, how long ago was that? I mean, I know this sounds crazy, but I just watched a movie that is the plot right there.
That was like 20 years ago.
Yeah, she's talking about something 20 years ago, and I watched a movie with the exact same plot, except in this case, the only people infected were men. And it had something to do with the genetic tampering with flies. I don't remember how the whole story goes, but what you were describing that happens to them, that's exactly it.
They degenerated rapidly into, you know, they were stupid. They even ran on all fours half the time, which humans are really not well adapted to.
Or is that an emerging disease? Are you, you know, seeing some kind of insight on something that will appear but we haven't seen yet? I mean, you know, look at mad cow disease. You know, how relevant was that, you know, 50 years ago? Or the flu, or, you know, the swine flu, those types of things. And those are more neurological things.
So. Yeah, you know, and I had that dream repeatedly and in various locations, you know, and seeing various ways some people survived. why they survived. They usually weren't in the area where there was anyone. And I had an opportunity to get smart before they had to deal with, you know, these things, because they really weren't people anymore. And I've also, you know, I had a dream. Oh, this was probably in the same time period as that original one. And this was people dressed in military uniforms going in and exterminating entire towns of anything that moved. Dogs, cats, rats, people, whatever. You know, children, infants, everybody. Everybody. And leaving, you know, and doing it again and again and again. And obviously there were survivors, because people would hide in basements and attics and whatnot and not be seen. But there weren't many.
Kind of paint the bleak future. But I can see where there would be situations in a future world where something like that might happen. You've got, I don't know, a whole town infected with, you know, I don't know, AIDS, or, you know, maybe even something worse than that. And, you know, what are your choices? You know, or some kind of contagion. You know, they're infected with some kind of contagion. What is your choice? I remember reading an article about Seattle, Washington. They did this huge 20-year survey on what would happen if there was a nuclear accident there of some kind, be it a bomb or, I don't know if they have any power plants up there, but, you know, something like that. And basically, they had it set up to where the whole city would just simply be cut off. You know, there were, as far as the report went, there were not going to be any survivors. They would just totally shut the city off. And that was a government-sponsored, you know, thing. I was reading it off of, I don't know, which site, NSA, CIA, somewhere, but it was this whole process of what they would do if this event should occur. And I thought, oh, my God.
You know, something like that could happen to any city, especially cities that have limited access in and out due to natural obstacles, like New Orleans being surrounded by water, you know. There would be, you know, if you got a disease loose in that city, the easy way to do it is simply cut it off.
Yeah. And you know what? As horrible as it sounds, that would be almost what you would have to do. If you had something, a high contagion, you know, there was, and that it was passed on human to human, I mean, what are you going to do, really, you know, to protect the rest of the population? Very, very frightening.
Yeah, you know, and you know, we have entities such as the Homeland Security and stuff to make sure that, you know, an area could be quarantined like that. And you know, I guess the next thing is what if you're in the area that's quarantined? What do you do then?
That's a very good question. I hear you're going to have a survivalist on here soon. I guess I'll have to ask them. So what happens if you get in a town that's been quarantined for whatever reason? Well, I guess we'll find out then. Excuse me. But
yeah, you know, because, you know, what if? Because, you know, even if there's an extremely contagious disease in the city, you know, some people should survive.
Oh, I'd imagine you're going to have people that are naturally immune to certain things, you know,
right. Even
that, or maybe they're ill and they get over it for whatever reason.
So, you have some people survive, or that are immune to the disease, so, you know, they really don't want to die here of starvation. What should they do, you know? Yeah, you know, they're a city filled with corpses, and they don't want to stay.
Yeah, I get to smell after all. I don't think I'd want to either.
I know how bad just the chicken warehouses smelled here. Okay, I don't want to imagine that.
Oh, you know, sometimes I just don't even want to know where my chicken comes from, or my beef, or anything else for that matter.
Well, this was after the hurricane, with, you know, no electricity. They had these huge warehouses that were filled with chicken on the riverfront. Waiting to be shipped out to China. Well, the frozen chicken didn't stay frozen a month, you know?
Right.
I don't know what they ultimately had to do with those buildings, but I know if the wind was right, it was pretty horrible.
Oh, I can only imagine.
I don't know who had to spend to clean them out. I don't know. You know, even with a bulldozer, if it took down the entire building, that still had to be, like, the most horrible job on earth.
That would not be fun. You know, we talked about the, you know, a sort of a natural disaster like a tsunami or, you know, but what about increased intensity storms? I've heard that from other people, too, where they'll be in the midst of raging tornadoes or a super volcano exploding or not even necessarily at the beginning of the event, just maybe they, I don't know, almost like you're transported to just a certain spot of it. You know, and these went on with people for many years. And then, you know, we get 20 years down the line, and then, you know, we start hearing about global warming, you know, the F5 tornadoes where they didn't even need that rating before, the F5 hurricanes where they didn't need that rating. And, you know, things become more violent. So
yeah, you know, it just, the increasing intensity of hurricanes and so forth and so on. Super volcanoes, I don't think we're going to have to worry too much about that because I've gathered from what I've read about super volcanoes, pretty much that's going to just toast us all right? We're not going to worry about that very long. You know, you might have time to know that you're going to die, but that's about it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's refreshing. Well, and, you know, and we're just talking about earthbound things. I mean, there's things out there in the solar system. You know, and I've even heard of people who have had, you know, those types of dreams. You know, a great solar flare that, you know, is big enough that it can get to Earth and it can do some damage. Again, though, these are oftentimes the aftermath. They're talking about what they're seeing after it happened. So that's kind of a little interesting pattern. It's not like going from, you know, beginning, middle to end. And
well, you know, it seems to me, now I'm digging up an old memory here. It must have been over 10 years ago because I didn't know you yet. There was a huge outage in most of the western United States and a good chunk of Canada that was due to a solar flare.
Yeah.
Okay, you know, that sort of event, you're shutting down our power, our cell phones, our communications. You know, if it lasted for more than a day or two, you're going to start seeing chaos as the ripple effects from the infrastructure's breakdown start to expand. You know, you can't get fuel. If it happens in the wintertime, you're getting cold. If it happens in the summertime, you're getting hot and testy. Water isn't, you know, being pumped, you know, and things are getting ugly real fast, you know. That is a potential scenario that you could see, you know, as being, you know, within the apocalyptic dreams or visions, you know, realm.
Right. That wouldn't be unrealistic at all. Well, we've seen that one event with New York when they lost power. What was it, a bird in a tree or chipmunk and whatever it was, but it took down a lot of grids. And, you know, luckily, you know, people really didn't seem to panic too much through that, but just to watch a whole city like New York out of power and people filing into the streets and, you know, trying to get out of the tall buildings and all that type of stuff, I mean, it was, watching it just on the news, was almost like, okay, so what if an event like that was, you know, was extended? You know, after a while, you'd see them strangling each other because they just can't stand it anymore. I mean,
it happen over and over again, usually in confined populations such as prisons. It gets hot, tempers get short, and violence can erupt.
Yeah.
You know, and that's normal. You add the stress of not knowing what's going on, not being able to get in touch with anyone, not being able to get the things that you want or need, and you're going to be even testier. You know, it's going to happen it can happen so quickly and so easily.
Yeah, it definitely could. Well, it really shows just how profoundly dependent we are on just simple things we take for granted, like our electricity, our running water, you know, those types of things. So, and it does. It throws you into, you know, what am I going to do? How am I going to, you know, My water's out right now. I got to, after this program, get a garden hose and drag it through my house and fill bathtubs. You know, it's a huge inconvenience. It does make you irritated, you know. It is. But imagine doing that for a prolonged period of time where you have a massive population. You know,
and I think in urban areas it's worse because you have the condensed population, you have limited pipelines for the various supplies. You know, because I think about it, when I lived in Arizona, I lived in this little teensy rural community. We had our water tank freeze, okay? The main tank froze, which tells you the main tank wasn't very big because it wasn't that cold. We didn't have any running water. None of the community did. We all had to go into town and fill up 5-gallon buckets and haul it back to flush our toilets, do our dishes, bathe, cook, whatever. Well, in addition, I had 3 horses and 3 dogs, and you know, start thinking about how much water needs to go down a horse in a 24-hour period, and I was hauling a lot of water, okay? And, you know, it was just one of those things, you know, living in the country, you sort of took it in stride. You grumbled, you moaned, you groaned, and you just did it. But what if I'd been in a city where I didn't have any options? You know, I couldn't go a few miles and get water. I just had to sit there and wait. You know, how would I react then?
I don't think I'd react very well, and that's probably a good reason for me not to move to the city.
So imagine concentrating 1 million people in a few square miles and then saying you have no water and you have no electricity and we don't know when you're going to get it. And, of course, you have no way of knowing that because you have no way of knowing what's happening in the rest of the world either.
You know, that's another thing that to me is even more strange. I don't know what's going on around my neck of the woods, but last Friday I came home from work. There was no power. My phone was out.
Well, speaking of power, hang on. It is time for another break. So, folks, stay tuned to the Paranormal Radio Network, and we will be right back with Donna Shades and November Hansen. Welcome back to the Donna Shades. I'm your host, Gia Scott, and I'm discussing dreams, visions, prophecies, and omens with our guest, November Hansen, a longtime friend of mine, as well as the host of The Voice of the People on the Paranormal Radio Network. Now, November and I have often discussed this topic in a more private forum, but it seemed to be time to give the topic more exposure as people deal with its increasing frequency in conjunction with the phenomena recently dubbed the Awakening. And it seems that more and more people are having this sort of dream and vision event. Now, even that phenomena is sort of part of the overall prophetic dream and vision phenomena. If you would like to join this discussion, you can either join the virtual auditorium in Powell Park. I have the directions for doing so posted on my website, which is www.giascott.com. They're in the right-hand column, so just scroll down until you find them. Call in on the toll-free number in the United States, just dial 1-877-786-0562. Now, November, we do have a hand raised in the auditorium. So, CDA 7428, if you will give your first name and your location, you're live and on the air with November Hansen.
I'm not a
Oh, that was funny. No, he's right. No, he's right with the prepared thing. I've actually done a survival skills show a long time ago, and I actually do have all that stuff and all on hand. It's still, when it happens, though, it can be quite annoying. I live in Oregon, and I do live remote, so it is quite frequently we can experience being without power or water or both or whatever. So I got a nice big swimming pool, and I've used it many times over the years. We got, you know, buckets and haul it up, and yeah, I've had to do all that kind of stuff. So I know.
And getting back on the dreams and the visions in a more personal sense, I mean, what was it, a month or two ago when I said, you know, in November, maybe you should get a backpack and put some essentials in it.
Yep, that's true. I was actually telling that story yesterday, the saga of the backpack.
That backpack is an ongoing story.
It is an ongoing story, and it's really quite humorous. My daughter was, you know, she's moved out, and she was going through things and says, Mom, you want this backpack? She says, I know you've always wanted one. You know, for when I go to visit my parents, just toss my clothes and whatever. So I said, sure. It was a nice one that she had used in school, and she just didn't want it anymore. So I put it in my closet on top of my air conditioner. A few days later, G is telling me about packing this backpack, that I need to do this. And I thought that was kind of funny because I just got one that I could actually do it with. And then a few days later, it shows up in the middle of my closet floor, and I'm going, who moved this? You know, maybe I'm supposed to pack it. You know, again, that synchronicity, those omens or whatever. And, you know, people keep bringing up this backpack thing. So it is in the closet. It is still unpacked. And eventually I'll put something in it. And then I started thinking, where am I going to go?
Cherry blossoms are about to bloom here, you know?
I know, but where am I going to go? I'm already in the middle of the woods.
Well, it's just the essentials. You know, it's not
right.
That you're necessarily going to go that far. You just need to have it ready.
Right.
You know, just be prepared. Yeah, that old Boy Scout saying, let's be prepared.
Yeah.
And I have to admit, I was never a Girl Scout, but my mother was involved in the Boy Scouts because of my brother. So I ended up going to every Boy Scout event there was until he was like 15 or so and quit Boy Scouts. And so I did attend a lot of Boy Scout functions as the only girl.
Yeah, I'm sure you learned a lot, too.
Oh, well, yeah. Mostly the Boy Scout skating parties are really kind of scary. yeah, but, you know, that was a kid thing. But in terms of, you know, signs and omens and these prophetic dreams, you know, when you hear a voice in your head that says, go home now, you kind of do step back and say, huh? I'm hearing voices in my head? You know, because we don't regard it as normal for us to hear voices in our heads.
No. I honestly can't say I've heard any voices in my head. Sometimes there's these little inclinations where you have more of a feeling than actually hearing a voice that you need to stop and, you know, go do something else.
Oh, no, I've actually had it. One night I was driving home. This is when I still lived in Arizona. And maybe I was prone because my grandmother had an incident. But anyhow, I'm driving home. In an area I used to go to watch the sky was, you know, you could see that area from the road that I was using to get home. And there were some lights out there, and I thought, there shouldn't be any lights out there. I'm going to go out there and see what's going on. Because there was nothing out there, okay, absolutely nothing. There wasn't even a power line out there, you know. And so, you know, I didn't intend to turn to go home. And I'm getting close to the turnoff, and I hear a voice that says, go home. And I'm like, huh? And I'm thinking, you know, great, you know, you're losing your mind now. And I had no intentions of going home. And I just kept glancing at the lights over there on the flats. And I get to the turnoff, and the voice is very stern sounding now. And it says, go home now. And I'm thinking, you know,
I think I'm going to listen to it. And I did. I went home. But that was largely because my grandmother had an incident. She had gone in town to do something or another and was going to go to visit some other relatives. And on the way to the relative's house, she was going to drive by her house. And she'd forgotten something, letters to mail or something like that. And she was just going to stop and pick them up. And when she got near the road to turn to go to her house, she heard a voice that says, "Don't go home." Well, she listened to it. She didn't go home. She went on to the relative's house. And when they got home several hours later, their house had been robbed. And they would, if she had turned up that road and gone home, they'd have walked in on the robbery. And among the things that was stolen that day were several weapons, loaded weapons.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, so, you know, maybe that makes me more prone to, if I hear a voice in my head to say, you know, maybe I should listen to this. Because, you know, I've heard that story actually occurred, probably in the mid to late 80s. And so, you know, it's fairly recently, you know, it wasn't all that many years before my grandparents passed away. So it's relevant to me.
Yeah. But, you know, there are other cases of that happening to people, too, Gia, where they do hear the proverbial voice, don't do this, don't go here, don't get in the car, and people do adhere to it. And for whatever reason, you know, it did save them from certain disaster.
Yeah. Now, I did have a question. It's not exactly on topic in the virtual auditorium that says, in your awakening and radio show, how have you affected your family?
Oh, my gosh. I would say more positive than anything. I was very surprised that my family, they really are very supportive. My husband's very supportive. My kids know I'm wild and crazy, and they're okay with that. They like that. I think my family's actually become much stronger because, you know, of my own experiences. We've been through some really rough times. Who hasn't? You know, but so far, you know, just the whole experiences that I have had started 10 years ago, you know, blossom into somebody asking me to do a radio show, and, you know, they're kind of, you know, it has. It's made my family much stronger, I think. I don't know. That doesn't really have much to do with dreams and omens.
Well, you know, when I think about it, you know, it's kind of like people have asked me, how has being an abductee changed your life? And it's like, I can't answer that because there's no way of knowing. It's like asking me, how has having brown eyes affected your life? Well, since I never had blue eyes, I don't know. Would my life have been different with blue eyes?
Well, I look at it this way. I think my life would have been really boring. You know, I mean, just...
You know, I can't even imagine it, you know?
Right.
I call it the weird factor, okay? The weird factor comes into my life all the time. My goal at 18, when I was graduating from high school, was I wanted a nice, boring picket fence, I'm so boring June Cleaver won't come visit me sort of life, where I knew what was going to happen 10 years from now, 20 years from now, 50 years from now. I have failed miserably.
Yeah, definitely. I would have to say the same thing. There's no way I would have envisioned that I would be sitting where I am today.
Oh, no. You know, I know you had no intentions of ever being a radio host.
Right.
You know, because I've known you so long now. You know, and you know, the same thing here. You know, when we first were talking about these sorts of topics, could you imagine doing it with thousands of people listening to you?
Heavens, no.
It was unimaginable. You know, it just... There's no way you could possibly. Did we see a sign that it was going to happen? Well, I didn't. Did you?
No, I certainly didn't see anything coming. Just, you know, Joe Montaldo and his spontaneity, you know, you want to do this? I'm like, huh?
yeah, you know, and it just, yeah, it's kind of one of those strange things that have happened. Oh, for one thing, I used to be so
resistant to entertaining any paranormal sorts of thoughts. I wanted everything cut and dried, physical evidence, scientific. There was no paranormal. It was all explainable. There was no spirituality. It was all explainable. And you know that. You know,
right,
I explained right. I was getting hives anytime it would go that direction.
That's true.
Yeah.
We can change in ways that we wouldn't even imagine.
Yeah, and now I'm sure spirituality and the paranormal weave in ways that we never even dreamed of before.
Nope, and it's been quite a journey, too, definitely. I mean, it definitely makes life much more interesting. There are no doubt about that.
Yeah, well, as far as dreams and omens and signs, I missed these road signs that I was going to come to this crossroads. I never had a clue, you know. And it's been very, very interesting. You know, the people that you meet, you know, perhaps they become part of the overall pattern of synchronicity and omens and prophecy. Because you do meet people that go hand in hand with where you're going and what you're doing.
Definitely, you do. And it just, you know, I think about, you know, relationship, the community, if you will, that was started 10 years ago, and how that community's grown and how those people interact with each other. And they really are more like a family than just a group of friends. You know, there's ins and outs and ups and downs and all that type of stuff. But, you know, they all seem to have something in common that, you know, drives them forward. And, you know, a lot of it is this, you know, the dreams that, you know, unusual visions, having the venue to talk to somebody about it and not have to be in your protective little bubble all the time. And know that you're not going to be, you know, ridiculed and laughed at and those types of things. You know, maybe part of it is just that human spirit of adventure, you know, of exploration. You know, you can only explore your surroundings so much, and, well, what else are you going to explore? And, you know, these unusual things in your life pop up. I mean, what an opportunity. And you learn so much from it. Even if you don't gain a specific meaning from it, the things that you learn along the way, you know, I've been able to use in all kinds of, you know, areas of my life.
Right. Now, have you noticed that as you go through life that when you need to know something, someone who knows it seems to appear in your life?
Yep, I've actually had that happen. I'm working on something, I can't figure it out, and I'll be, you know, telling somebody about it, and then all of a sudden somebody comes up with an answer. Yeah, I've had that happen many times.
I was talking with a friend about, you know, various sorts of old-fashioned skills, and I said one thing that I had never done, you know, I knew the theory of, and I'd seen people doing it, but I had never done, was basket making. And then there were certain types of baskets that I really didn't know anything about, like the pine needle basket. I went camping a week and a half ago or so, and lo and behold, there was a woman in the campground that was making pine needle baskets.
What? You can make baskets out of pine needles? Oh my gosh, I have enough pine needles. I can make baskets to supply the world.
Well, you need the long ones.
Oh,
okay. So do you have the little bitty short ones?
I have the little bitty
various
short
lengths.
Ones. I forget that.
Yeah. Yeah. For the person in the virtual auditorium who wants to know if I was weaving baskets, no, I didn't actually weave a basket, but that's a project that is for another day. But yeah, you know, we have these long pine needles here, and they can be 6 to 9 inches long or something. They're really long. So they're really easy to work with in terms of weaving. You know, you can do it with shorter ones, you know, 3 or 4 inches. But if you get down to the 2-inch ones, no. That's a little tough.
Yeah, I don't think I'll be attempting that.
Yeah.
But you never know. Sometime in the future, you may need to know how to make those baskets.
You know, all sorts of baskets, you know, and I'd never done any basket weaving. You know, I'd done some basic weaving, and I'd made, you know, real crude baskets. I sure wouldn't want to put that on my mantle to display it, but yeah. You know, and I wanted to learn how to make soap, or someone up here to teach me how to make soap, although I can remember the first time we made soap. We've got the directions
we're standing there, and it says to stir until you reach the point of saponification. And I looked at her, and she looked at me, and we said, what does it look like at the point of saponification?
Where's the dictionary?
Well, the thing is you, we knew what the term meant, but how did you know? Because it's like the first time you make jelly with fruit that contains natural pectin, where you have to cook it just so, you don't know what that jelly point is until you've experienced it. And it's the sort of same thing with point of saponification, okay? But there was nothing to describing it to tell us, and it was like now I know what it means. I know what it looks like because I've made lots of soap over the years. But that very first time, it was like, oh, I don't know. Yeah, so it was amusing, You try things and whatnot. And so, does my interest in these old-fashioned skills somehow play into the overall synchronicity of apocalyptic dreams and survivalism and whatnot?
Oh, you never know. Sometimes I wonder, for me anyways, if it's not upbringing that even plays into it. Not that my, parents were of apocalyptic nature or thought the end of the world was coming or anything like that, but they did feel that even in the modern age that it was important that we knew how to, raise a garden, how to care for the vegetables, take care of animals, butcher a chicken. Let me tell you, that was not fun. just skin a deer. I mean, just, basic human survival things, from the past, which my family seemed to enjoy a lot even then. And, you just picked up on all those things. Fishing, I knew how to, bait a hook and fish when I was 4 years old. It's no big deal. And, gut it, that type of stuff. And it was like, nobody ever told me at the time that, you're learning this in case you need to use this in the future. It was just something that we did. And, I often wonder now that I'm older and this whole other experience thing, came along, is this information that I will need someday later in life? I kind of hope not, because I really like my, life.
Yeah, I have lived where, electricity wasn't there and, life was not all that different from 100 years ago, other than, a couple times a month we did go to town where they had air conditioning and electricity and ice and groceries and things like that. But, I really like the convenience of flipping a switch and there's light. I like having a refrigerator and I can open up the freezer and get an ice cube anytime I want it. I like the convenience of saying, oh, I want to bake bread. It's not a two-day preparation process. Getting the wood and starting your sponge and everything like that. I like the convenience of I can use the bread machine if I want.
Yeah, definitely. But yet, I'll bet you could make it outside in a wood pit or, figure out how to pack that clay together and make a little oven, that type of thing. If you had to. Let's hope we never
Well, had. I have baked a lot of cinnamon rolls, to be honest, over the years, and other kinds of breads and cakes and whatnot in Dutch ovens, in a fire pit, with wood coals, the whole bit. We have a question in the virtual auditorium. Are we hearing any 2012 dreams? I haven't had anything specifically tied to 2012. In fact, when I think about all of the dreams and whatnot that I've been told, I really have very few indicators of when at all, except that a lot of them seem to happen in late summer, early fall.
Yeah, I haven't heard any either. No talk on 2012 dreams. However, there is a lot of talk on these types of dreams. So is that because, you do. You have to wonder if it's, some kind of subconscious thing. Maybe even something, there is an event that we will see, just totally natural happening that's kind of, weaved into our evolution, a memory, if you will. And
yep. So hang on to that thought. It is time for a break. So, folks,
stay tuned to the Paranormal Radio Network, and the Donna Shades will be right back with November Hansen. Welcome back to the Donna Shades. I'm your host, Jean Scott, and I'm discussing dreams, visions, prophecies, and omens with our guest, November Hansen, who's also the host of The Voice of the People on the Paranormal Radio Network. Now, we've been talking about this for the last hour and a half. We've got another half hour ahead of us. But, folks, I was really hoping for some audience participation here. So you can join the virtual auditorium. The directions are right there on my website, which is www.gscott.com. They're right in the right-hand column. To call in on the toll-free number, just dial 1-877-786-0562. Raise your hand in that virtual auditorium and give us some input. And one thing we really haven't talked about tonight is a phenomena called dreamwalking or dream weaving. You know, and that's something that's it's very real. I don't know how prophetic it is, but it is an interesting phenomena. Basically, it involves the conscious control and interaction of more than one person in the dream when they're doing it consciously. Now, obviously, people can do it with no conscious control. But have you ever had an occasion where when you were dreaming, it felt like you were dreaming in Grand Central Station and every person on the whole entire earth was pumping in on your dream? Well, maybe, you actually show someone something in your dream, consciously show somebody a skill or something.
Yeah, actually I have. Maybe a couple of times. I even had a case where I had a Native American friend, this was many, many years ago, and I asked him that specific question, is it possible to have a dreamwalker? He says, oh yeah, that's been known amongst my people for a long time, where people actually come in and mess with your dreams. And I thought, oh my gosh. And I said, well, what do you do if you get one of those? And he asked me about it, he said he'd take care of it, and guess what? It stopped.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, well, maybe there is something to it, or just a coincidence that it stopped after I had spoke with him about it. So it was really interesting, but it was an intrusion, is what I would call it, into my dream world, and I didn't.
There have been occasions where I felt as though it was an intrusion. Usually, it's rather like people come wandering through. They're really not doing anything other than, hi, how you doing? Nice to see you, and on their way, That's one thing, or when, there's like, an agreement between two people and you're showing someone something in a dream, that's different too. But when someone tries to manipulate your dream to change it, alter it, usually they have a motive to do so. They want you to do something, and they're using the dream to try to push you to do it. That, I find intrusive and immoral, I guess.
I agree.
My personal experience has been when you realize the person is doing it, just turning around and saying, their name and telling them to quit is usually enough to break that connection where it stops. That's my personal experience.
Yeah, I probably agree with that. Like I said, I've only had really
one. No, it's not something that, that dream walking thing, it's not something that happens frequently. I can go years between incidents. There are times when you do want to show someone, share something with somebody. And, showing them in a dream is rather, it's like a psychic communication. You're playing this film out and you can interact, and it's like a multimedia presentation, I guess. in a psychic forum. You know, that's the only thing I could describe it like. You know, that's what I've used it like. You know, and I don't think that that's intrusive. It's not like, you know, I can say, okay, November tonight at 2:30 a.m., we're going to have a multi-presentation in the dream world, and, you know, you're going to be there.
Yeah, yeah, well, if that happens, I'll be phoning you in the morning, so you better be ready. No, I haven't had anything really, you know, quite like that, but I have heard of it, and I've heard of it from others. And, yeah, it is kind of an interesting phenomenon. You know, I think all the stuff, Gia, that we've been talking about is, you know, we're not talking about these two ladies that have these weird things happen to them on a daily basis. You know, we're talking about things that have spanned decades. And it's, you know, it just kind of comes and goes types of things. And, you know, but there's enough going on at a certain point in time where you wake up and or sit up straight and you say, okay, is there something to this? So you start contacting people. And, you know, asking them, hey, you got anything like this going on? You find somebody else that has these kind of dreams going on, and then you begin to wonder. You know, that happened with the, Hurricane Katrina. I mean, people were talking about that and water dreams and hurricanes and long before the thing ever even formed. You know, then when it happened, it wasn't...
Well, you know, when it happened, I have to admit, it was, I guess, a week or two beforehand. I went and talked to a friend. I said, I don't. It's crazy. It's like I can't figure out how to get out of the city. I don't know how to get out. I'm trapped. And he looks at me like I'm crazy, you know, because, you know, you get on the interstate and you leave the city. You get on the bridge and you cross and you leave the city. And it didn't make sense. You know, it was insane. And, you know, it's this fixation. I can't get out of the city. I don't know how to get out of the city. Well, you know, it made more sense that, you know, that feeling, excuse me, when Katrina came and we had to evacuate. You know, beforehand, it was just, it was stupid. Because, right. You know, I don't know how to get out of the city. That's stupid. You know, if you drive, you know how to get out of the city. Now, we do have a question in the virtual auditorium. It says, do you think discovering aspects of your inner selves have helped in dealing with your outer material existence to give you a more understanding of who you are, your place, purpose, upon this reality?
You can answer that first. Wow.
Well, you know, discovering aspects of your inner self is part of our journey, I guess. You have to if you're going to grow as a person. So, you know, does it help with our outer material existence and understanding who we are? Well, it has to. You know, it really has to. I don't see how it's avoidable.
No, it does help you put things in perspective, I think. It helps you to, you know, deal with a constantly changing world and all the, you know, different things that pop up. So, you know, if you go in search of yourself, yeah, definitely. It helps you deal with your outer material, you know, existence. Sometimes, there's even times that I've often wondered over the last 10 years, because I'll tell you, it seemed like life just roamed along at a certain pace, you know, had kids, they're growing up, husband, family, whole nine yards, everything's going pretty good, and then 10 years, and then all of a sudden, you know, somebody opened the floodgates to hell. There was always something going on. It was traumatic, it was depressing, it was, you know, whatever. So you kind of go through this, you know, this inner search, and it's like each disaster that you go through, you come out much stronger than what you were before because you learn so much, you know, from it. And then that kind of goes back to working with the inner self and trying to, and then in the end, you know, do you discover your place, who you are, that type of thing? You might have a strong sense of who you are. You might have a strong sense of your place, purpose, or whatever, but I don't know that that's ever absolutely defined to yourself. You know, exactly what it is. Like, I'm not running around saying that I'm going to try to save the world or, you know, I'm going to do this for people or anything like that, you know, but it definitely, you know, it is. And then sometimes you wonder, did I do this myself or was something precipitating that I needed to do this? You know, it is. It's quite...
But understanding ourselves is also an ongoing process because we're not static entities.
Right.
So it's, you know, we're continually evolving and changing and shifting and growing and shrinking and aging and whatnot, you know. So it's a continual process. It starts when we're young, you know, and you know, when we're in our teen years, we're really not that focused on the spiritual realm, the paranormal realm, the idea of dreams being real. We're much more on the here and now, and years take forever. You know, and as we age, years get shorter and shorter.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, you know, it seems like the last 5 years has just whizzed past me. It's like, where was I? I missed it.
Yep, I'd have to agree with that, definitely. I don't know if that answered the person's question very well, but that's probably, at this point in time anyways, the best I have to offer.
Yeah, you know, and I guess the purpose of the program tonight wasn't really to offer pat answers, because pat answers don't exist, especially in things that are as open to interpretation as prophecies, dreams, and visions. Yeah, it's not going to happen. It's just, so many people do want to offer, you know, you can buy a book and it'll interpret your dreams for you. It doesn't work, you know?
No, it doesn't. I actually have a couple of those books. I bought them. Whoever was saying, the teenagers that were studying their toenails, well, you know, I was a little bit interested in dreams and understanding them back when I was a teenager, and you know, and I read those things and I thought, well, this don't mean a thing to me. It was just totally over the top of my head or meaningless altogether.
Well, I suppose I had an interest in things paranormal as a teenager, but it was more a curiosity and sort of evolved from the fact that we lived in a haunted house to begin with, you know, so you had to be somewhat interested because you wanted to understand what this phenomena was, why was it happening, you know, why is it that when we go to bed suddenly the pots and pans in the kitchen dish drainer are flying around the kitchen, and why do these things happen? So you go looking for some answers. You know, did I have prophetic dreams as a teenager? Oh. You know, I wasn't far out of my teens when the apocalyptic dreams started. It may have been before my daughter was born, or around the time she was born. I was 21 when she was born, so, you know. About 20, I guess. You know, maybe I started having more of an interest, or more of a, I wouldn't say interest, because I really wasn't interested. I just thought I had been watching too much TV, you know, personally. And I think that's common, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Self-analyzation, you bet. Constantly asking yourself, okay, was this brought about because of something I've seen on TV? Was it brought about because of a conversation I had with somebody? Was it brought about because people keep talking about the year 2012 and expect something to happen? You know, what, you know, is there an outside source that's precipitating, you know, the dreams or the synchronicity or the, I don't call them visions, I call them images or omens or, you know, you are constantly questioning yourself. And that's probably a good thing, it's probably a healthy thing. But in the same sense, you really can't, then you still don't get any answers, so you're off looking in other directions for, you know, those answers. I don't know. Maybe there will be something someday, and it's like, okay, duh, this all makes sense now. You know, I kind of hope not, but, you know.
I have a friend who insists that to watch the Euphrates River, that when it flows backwards, you know, it's all happening now. Now, is the Euphrates River just a symbolic river, or is it literally the Euphrates River?
Very interesting. I have no idea. You know, I hear little pieces like that, you know, frequently. Well, we've always heard when the moon turns blood red and the sun's as black as sackcloth. You know, all these different little things. Those are the signs in the sky, you know. I don't know. I know, and it's funny. I don't know about you, but I even have people that actually question me as if I should know. Now, how am I supposed to know? Get on your journey. Get your book out. You know, start looking. It is really hard. But, you know, sometimes I think we just have everybody has little pieces to some kind of elaborate, you know, lifespan puzzle. And if we do get together and we do discuss things, there are things that begin to make sense. You can put them into a category. It's like, okay, I don't need to deal with that anymore because it fits here. And, you know, we've done that for years, though. You know, people get stuck on things.
Just like when the time of prophecy is here, we will run out of time. And we have tonight, too. So, folks, do tune in again next week. We'll have Jim Mars, the New York Times best-selling author and investigative reporter. He'll give us the inside scoop on the Army's remote viewing program in his new book, Sci-Spies, the True Story of America's Psychic Warfare Program. The week after that, I'm bringing on a survivalist, and we're going to be talking about actually getting prepared for that event we all hope never happens. So, on that note, I hope this program helps you tonight on your own personal journey towards truth. And with that, I thank you for tuning in to the Dawn of Shades. Tune in again next week. I'm your host, Gia Scott, and good night.